Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. Every 3 months for the past 7 years, Peterson Toscano has been guest host for Spirit in Action, sharing the fruits of his Citizens Climate Radio podcast. And today's the lucky day when he's here again. Though most people tend to think of climate change as a progressive issue, there are plenty of conservatives woke to the concern and investing lots of sweat in making a change. And that's most what you'll be hearing today, as Peterson shares a roundtable discussion with 5+ conservatives as part of his Hot Mess series. And then, after that exchange, you'll be snorkeling through an interview with Linda Sue Park, author of Gracie Under the Waves. Right now, I'm passing the mic to Peterson Toscano to dig in. All yours, Peterson.
Thank you, Mark. Today, I bring you the final installment of Hot Mess, How Climate Consensus Turned Into Political Chaos. This is an 8-part true crime-style podcast series that explores how bipartisan concern for climate change unraveled into political gridlock. I created the series for Citizens Climate Radio. This final episode is special and different. It features a compelling roundtable discussion with conservatives shaping climate policy. These include former Republican Congressman Bob Inglis, Chelsea Henderson of Eco Right Speaks, and the host of Green Tea Party Radio. Later, we'll also hear from Drew Ierley, Citizen Climate Lobby's Conservative Outreach Director. And finally, Citizens Climate Radio correspondent Elise Silvestri sits down with Newbery Medal-winning author Linda Sue Park to discuss her latest book, Gracie Under the Waves. They consider how storytelling can inspire climate awareness. Thank you for joining me. Welcome to the 8th and final episode of Hot Mess, How Climate Consensus Turned Into Political Chaos. I'm Peterson Toscano, host of Citizens Climate Radio. Over the past episodes, we've unpacked how unified concern about global warming unraveled into decades of political stalling, misinformation, and missed opportunities. Today, we're wrapping things up with a roundtable discussion featuring voices that span generations, experiences, and perspectives within the conservative climate movement. You'll hear from Bob Inglis, former Republican congressman and executive director of RepublicEN.org.
Very few people really are still arguing with thermometers.
Chelsea Henderson, director of editorial content at RepublicEN.org and host of Eco Right Speaks.
I think that one thing we have seen, if you look over time, is how important it is that one side not have a monopoly.
Katie Zarkreski, journalist and co-host of Green Tea Party Radio.
This is an economic issue. This is a national security issue. This is a pro-life issue.
And Zach Torpy, environmental engineer and fellow co-host of Green Tea Party Radio.
With Trump in the office, there has to be an emphasis on tariffs. You could talk about the border adjustment being a carbon tariff on foreign countries and foreign polluters like China and India.
Together, we'll reflect on key takeaways from this series, dive into the cultural and political factors that shape the conservative climate movement, and explore what lies ahead. After the panel, I sit down with Drew Ierley, Citizens Climate Lobby's Conservative Outreach Director, to hear how conservatives are shaping a path forward for climate action. Let's begin. Our roundtable guests are no strangers to the challenges and triumphs of advancing climate solutions in conservative spaces. Representative Bob Inglis knows firsthand what it's like to challenge the status quo. As a former congressman, he's championed conservative climate action, earning recognition with the 2015 John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award. Bob also appears in the documentary Merchants of Doubt, which exposes the dark side of misinformation campaigns. Chelsea Henderson has spent nearly 25 years striking bipartisan compromises on climate policy. From her work on Capitol Hill to her role as host of Eco Right Speaks podcast, Chelsea continues to bring Republicans and Democrats to the table for real solutions. She's also author of the book Glacial, which is a deep dive into the history of climate politics. Katie Sarkreski is a journalist, environmental advocate, and co-host of Green Tea Party Radio, where she and Zach Torpy highlight climate solutions that resonate with young conservatives. Zach is an environmental engineer and a strong voice for pragmatic climate solutions. His vision? An America that leads the way in addressing climate change while preserving its natural beauty. Before we begin the roundtable, I want to give you a heads up about a name that comes up later in our discussion. Mark Morano. Bob will mention him as part of the climate misinformation machine. Mark Morano is a well-known figure in climate skepticism. He's the founder of Climate Depot and a frequent guest on conservative media outlets. In the film Merchants of Doubt, Bob recalls how the filmmakers captured Morano admitting to his role in spreading industry-driven climate misinformation. Morano's tactics, which include amplifying disinformation and attacking climate scientists, have played a significant role in fueling doubt about climate change. His admissions in Merchants of Doubt reveal how deeply the fossil fuel industry has influenced public discourse. As you listen to the roundtable, keep this context in mind when Bob mentions Morano's contributions to the climate skepticism movement. Now, we hear from Chelsea Henderson, Katie Sarkreski, Zach Torpy, and Representative Bob Inglis.
I am thrilled to be with this illustrious group of people. We have some young conservatives and some folks who are a little bit older who've been working on conservative issues for a long time. Welcome, everyone.
I was actually just going to thank you for not calling me and Bob old. Seasoned, experienced.
Yeah. That was nice. And Peterson, just congratulations on the series. And this is the eighth and final of yours, eighth of eight. So thank you for all the work you've done in all those episodes.
It's been such a learning experience. And I have to say, reading Chelsea's wonderful book, Glacial, reading that and doing this research and talking with you all has really been sobering. In looking at the past 50 years, it's been sad, the many missed opportunities. And it's been, I don't know, inspiring, the many people like you, Bob, who have pushed against the tide and gotten the conversation started with conservatives. After spending all this time, many, many hours on this, we clearly in the United States have had a problem with addressing climate change in any serious way. So who do you think bears the most responsibility for 50 years of denial, delay, and doubt?
You know, when you first were heading in the direction of this question, I was going to say the oil and gas industry, but I'm going to dial back on that and say that it is the apathy of regular citizens. And I think part of that is it took a long time for climate change to be something that was happening to people in their daily lives. So if you contrast climate change with something like acid rain or the hole in the ozone, which posed real immediate threats to people, at the same time, the scientists were raising the alarms about climate change, but it didn't feel like it was happening. It was all projected to be in the future. And so while we're kind of triaging what we have to deal with on a daily basis, our own personal stresses, work stresses, family stresses, there's something bigger level that we're going to worry about, and it isn't even happening yet. Yeah, we're going to shelf it. And so maybe it is that combined with some of the disinformation campaigns that told people, well, if we do something about it, it's going to raise your energy prices. And we're not even sure this is really the problem we need to address. And so I think that was maybe like a very lethal combination of things that have led us to this point where 60 plus years of attempts to enact a solution have kind of fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, I agree that it's the human condition to, you know, when faced with a global problem and I'm just one person, I just got to accept it the way it is. It's like death and taxes. In order to be successful, we have to overcome that. We have to say, no, there's things we can do. We can overcome this. There's solutions. You know, problem is like on healthcare. Healthcare is an impossible problem to solve. Hmm. There's 100% death rate, and there's a lot of suffering between here and there. So all you can do in healthcare is just hope to alleviate the suffering. The difference between that and climate is you can actually solve climate. You can actually fix this. But it's a worldwide problem, and I'm just one person. So we got to give people a sense that they can have some influence on this, and particularly have leaders that are courageous enough to tell us, hey, you know what? There's solutions.
You need everyone rowing in the same direction, and it's hard to get different political parties, different nations, and different groups with different vested interests going in the same direction. So it's hard to unite everyone to solve this issue, especially when people are concerned about the economics and how we're going to fund things. A lot of it's just getting mutual buy-in from all groups.
What Zach was saying. Oh, sorry, Katie. No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Chelsea. Go ahead.
I was just going to say Zach's point about getting alignment with different parties and constituencies and stuff. I think that one thing we have seen, if you look over time, is how important it is that one side not have a monopoly, either the solutions that are enacted or the ideas that are on the table, because then you do end up in a lopsided sort of mess, or you end up in a situation where there's no long-term certainties. You know, what one Congress does, another Congress can undo. And if one Congress does something in a hyper-partisan way, then the next Congress can undo that. Yet if we work together, then you have solutions that are more durable.
I won't beat around the bush about who I think is responsible. I realized... And I looked for a way to word this, but when you're in your 20s, like Zach and I, you might not be as familiar with the origins of a lot of this as maybe some of the folks who've been doing this work for a few decades. And so even as I was going back and doing a deep dive into research, I was like, man, Exxon really did put a number on everybody. When you look back at the oil and gas industry, yeah, I'm going to initially blame them. But as a journalist, I'm also going to blame the media, because it was really alarming to read how a lot of these newspapers would write editorials and publish op-eds that were like, oh my goodness, the fossil fuel industry is so bad, so terrible. And then in poor economic times, they're running a full page ad for Exxon on the next page because they need the advertising money. So it was, you know, yeah, we acknowledge this is bad, but we got no problem promoting it when we need the cash. So I feel like a lot of different groups and organizations really need to be able to put their money where their mouth is in terms of, you know, if something's wrong, even if we need the money, we're not going to accept money from these individuals that we clearly don't agree with, that we acknowledge have done some sort of wrongdoing. For me, as a journalist, at least, it's twofold. You've got the oil and gas industry, but then you've also got the media that I don't think did enough to shine the light not only on the truth in those early decades in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but also kind of turned a blind eye to it in the years and decades after that.
Well, I think this is such an important point, though, about the role of the fossil fuel industry, particularly when we look at episode 7, which is about how climate skepticism has been very much a U.S. thing compared to the rest of the world. And Bob, I love that you were in the film Merchants of Doubt. I wish you had been in the book as well, because the book, you know, is very discouraging. But with you in the film, it like showed like there's a movement forward. But how did that experience of being in that film, Merchants of Doubt, how did that shape your understanding of the role of misinformation in this debate?
Wow. If you haven't seen it, it's really worth seeing. Merchants of Doubt. It's a film by Robbie Kinner, based on the book by Naomi Oreskes. And I asked Ravi, How did you get Mark Morano to say all that to you? Did you think out of a date? What did you do? And Robbie is just such a great interviewer. He says, well, you just ask people and they'll tell you their story. He just got Mark Morano to hang himself. I mean, it's just really, anyway, it's really worth watching. And also, just to celebrate what Robbie does, you know, he doesn't pick up the microphone and do a voiceover when he wants to transition between one thing and another. He actually puts only voices in there, the people that he interviews. So it's an enormously difficult, challenging way that he does a documentary. Watch how the producer or the whatever, the director, just picks up a microphone and does the voiceover to get from one to another. That's not what Robbie does. It's really hard work. So it's really well done. He told me that the main thing he wanted to do is get some emotion in the film. He called me up, Peterson. He asked me, you know, he's going on and on about how will you get on this film with me? Will you do this? And I'm like, Robbie, if you take a breath, I'd say yes, because my kids had come home with Food Inc., which is his film too. And it sort of changed the way that they were eating, we were eating. And so I knew that my polling numbers would go up with my kids if I were on with Robbie, you know, did a film with Robbie Kennedy. And so I said, Robbie, yes, of course. He said that he had seen dozens of climate films. He said, I can't remember any of them. He said, what he wants to do in this film is have some lasting reaction. And the reaction is, you know what? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Robbie has produced a film that really shows, you kidding me? You, the same people who doubted the causal connection between smoking and cancer actually moved on to other things where they introduced doubt. And the great thing about Naomi Oreskes is I told her, Naomi, you didn't do the easy thing, which is say, oh, it's just the money. That's what they're after. No, she said, no, it's not that. What happened is these people got out of sync with the whole body of science and the whole body of their colleagues in the scientific world. And then they were out there on their own and they needed to create a new tribe. And so the tribe they created was Merchants of Doubt.
Yeah, it is eye-opening and definitely worth watching. I think it's one of the most important climate films out there. And it makes me wonder, though, clearly the fossil fuel industry, as you've talked about, Chelsea, in your book and on the show, poured millions and millions of dollars into taking advantage of our emotions and our culture. And so I'm wondering, were lawmakers and the public truly duped by this? And that's what delayed things? Were some complicit in allowing the doubt to fester? Have we all been gaslit for a long time by fossil fuel industry?
As Bob was saying about the human condition, right? Everyone's going about their day and they have a bunch of things to worry about. So if a really flashy ad is telling you, you don't have to worry about this one thing, then you're just going to take it out of your mindset. But we are still in a place where people still don't believe. And I'm sure that Zach and Katie get this, but Bob and I get the RepublicEN.org social media or responses back to the weekly newsletter that I put out for RepublicEN.org, that sometimes if we've had a membership push and somebody maybe doesn't understand exactly what they've signed up for and they respond back with climate change is fake and it's not real and it's a hoax, there are those moments where that happens. So we still wrestle today with that doubt. Though I think on the political level, denialism is not as prevalent as it once was. There is an understanding from many policymakers, and as evidenced by John Curtis's, when he was in the House, his conservative climate caucus had over 80 people. It was one of the largest caucuses in the House, if not the largest. I'm not saying that each one of those members of that caucus was like dying to go out and introduce a bill, but they were in the caucus to try to learn and to not be shamed about the fact that they might not know as much as some of their peers in the House. We do have this weird disconnect, right? Where maybe most Americans haven't been engaged on a daily basis. And then you had lawmakers that were, as Bob likes to say, the elected officials are not the leaders, right? They are following what their constituents or what the tidal wave is sort of moving toward. But at the same time, if you just look at polling, right, the polling shows overwhelmingly that people support climate action. The politics hasn't caught up with the polling, but then the people aren't driving the politics enough either. And, you know, it might come down to the fact that there are just other priorities that people have. And I know one thing that I keep trying to make is that we can't think about climate change as an environmental issue, right? This isn't just a tree hugging issue. It is so much an economic issue right now. At the time that we're sitting and recording this, California is on fire. Southern California, probably the most costly natural disaster in US history. While the scientists have not yet come out to say that this fire was caused by climate change, we know that wildfires can be more intense and can happen off season, et cetera, because of the conditions that are created by climate change. And sort of going back a few months ago to Hurricane Helene, the scientists were pretty quick on that one to say, yes, the conditions of that have been caused by climate change caused Helene to drop 50% more water or whatever the percentage was than a normal hurricane would have. So, you know, these have real economic costs. It's loss of business. I mean, obviously loss of life. So the human loss is devastating. And then loss of homes and the loss of those homes causing the insurance industry to flee some of these states that are on the front lines of climate change. Loss of property and loss of business. I mean, the mental health toll that's going to take on people, the health impacts. I mean, those are real things you can put price tags on that are going to add up. So for people that are either voting or thinking the economy comes first, they need to see the connection between the economy and climate change or economic prosperity and climate change.
Chelsea, I think as the generations have gotten younger, we've experienced a reduction in denialism and more of just we're completely overwhelmed by how chaotic the world is. There's too many issues to focus on, and people just shut down and go on TikTok, Reels, and disengage from the world and just disassociate. And now people just don't want to deal with the issues that they're facing. They just want to focus on what they can manage in their own lives. And it's becoming difficult to get people to care again. Why should they care about the Amazon when they're struggling day to day with their paychecks and having to make their own living? I really do think the best argument for climate change is arguing about the economics of it and talking about the levelized cost of energy of solar and wind versus oil and natural gas, and talking about the impacts that we're going to have. I would just like to live in a better society where it's easy to walk to a supermarket and I can go out to a bar and get a drink and see people in walking distance from where I live. That's how I like to argue it.
I think when you look at the six Americas, the study that George Mason University's Climate Change Communication Center and the Yale Center for Climate Communication put up together, and they update periodically, the category disengaged to me is more troubling than the category dismissive, because that category of people that dismiss or don't believe, you know, the non-believers is so small now, it's single digits. But what you were just saying, Zach, about the disengagement and the role that social media plays in that disengagement. Yeah, you're just going to wake up and start scrolling because you want to see something that makes you laugh, or you want to see something that feels worse than what you're going through, or something you can empathize with. Yeah, the disengaged portion of our society is where we need to light that spark and to show that what is possible, right? What is possible with bipartisanship, what is possible with leadership, the economic prosperity that we could see if we were innovating to the extent that the U.S. can, because we are one of the most innovative countries in the world and a leader on the global stage. We could have that life that you are envisioning. We need more attention. We need more engagement.
Chelsea, I'm glad
puppies
you said
and
that.
Kittens are very engaging. Yeah. I wish they would talk about climate change.
Yeah, more puppies, kittens, bunnies, baby skunks. We need some more input from them. But Chelsea, I'm really glad that you said what you did. I think Zach hears me say at least twice a week, every week, when we record for Green Tea Party Radio, that I'm an optimistic pessimist. So I always try to look for some sort of silver lining to give me hope. I've been hearing a lot of conservatives talk about, okay, well, you know, the economy is going to be our primary issue. That's why the election went the way that it did. We only care about the economy. Everything else takes a backseat to the economy. But for me, what that means is we are in a prime position over the next 4 years to sell conservatives on this is an economic issue. This is a national security issue. This is a pro-life issue. this is an issue that conservatives have touted the values of for decades, and it's time that we sit at the table and address it for the issue that it is. If we don't like what our counterparts on the left are saying, okay, then let's play ball. What do we propose? This is our opportunity to show, you know, if we don't like the economy the way that it is, okay, let's make more manufacturing jobs here in the U.S. Let's create more of those jobs that don't need four-year degrees. Let's open that up for low-income and blue-collar and working-class families. Let's keep it here. Let's start working on things that won't completely flood our naval bases. The next 4 years are going to be the key for really making this environmental issue a conservative one.
Perfect segue, because we're coming to the end. So what are the next steps? I mean, economically, a C-band is going to come into place with the European Union in 2026. And this podcast has been focusing on conservatives and conservative voices. And now we have a very conservative government in the United States. For those doing climate work, for you doing climate work, what's next? The conversation isn't over. Bob still needs to answer my question. What's next? We will also hear from Drew Ierley about why more conservatives are stepping up to take climate action and how they hope their efforts reshape the political conversation. And before we end, you will hear from Linda Sue Park. She shares how a love for snorkeling led to a powerful climate story for young readers. Stick around. There's more to come.
Thanks to Peterson Toscano for sitting in today for Spirit in Action. We'll get back to part two of his Citizens Climate Radio guest host show right after I remind you that this is Spirit in Action. Our website is northernspiritradio.org, and you should visit our site, peruse the thousands of shows we've done over the past 20 years, both Spirit in Action and Song of the Soul, and follow the links to our guests and also to the 35-plus stations that carry our shows, and much more. Again, NordenSpiritRadio.org is our site. Visit, post comment, connect up, and maybe donate to help us finish our 20th year strong. Independent, thoughtful, progressive media is more important than ever, and we rely on listeners, not corporations, to make us strong. Also, support those 35-plus community radio stations, giving us an honest, caring voice, not beholden to the oligarchy. Help our voice be strong here at Northern Spirit Radio and across the country through alternative media. And now let's head back to the folks for that other alternative media voice, Citizens Climate Radio, guest hosting here today. Your turn, Peterson.
Now we have a very conservative government in the United States. For those doing climate work, for you doing climate work, what's next?
I think the most likely path forward is the Senator Cassidy's Foreign Pollution Fee Act, which gets the conversation going about how do you get the world in on this? Because, you know, Peterson, back when I was getting tossed out of Congress in 2010, it was very much aggressive disbelief. You know, it's basically people saying, I believe in climate change. You shouldn't either. That's all changed now. As Chelsea was just pointing out, very few people really are still arguing with thermometers. That dismissive group has just gone down. What it is now is, yeah, but how do you get the world in on this? Well, it might be that people like Senator Cassidy has a solution, which is, Let's attach those costs to products when they're sent to us from China. And then let's see what it looks like compared to the cleaner American stuff. And so it creates incentives that really work. And so I think that may be a step toward a full-blown carbon border adjustment mechanism. And hopefully later a domestic price on carbon dioxide, which when paired with either a dividend back to the people to taxpayers, or with a reduction in payroll taxes, results in no growth of government. And pretty exciting for conservatives to solve a problem without growing government.
What do you have to say? What's next for you all in your next year of broadcasting, and what issues you're going to focus on?
honestly, I think for us, it's convincing more young people that people like us exist, that you're not alone if you feel this way, and that the onus is on you as a young person to contact your member of Congress and let them know that you exist, that as somebody who's getting ready to hopefully buy a house, start a family, work a job, travel to work, these are your concerns about whether or not you can do it in a way that's affordable and environmentally friendly. And Zach, I cut you off. What were you going to say? I'm so sorry.
I'll say I totally agree with Bob. I also think it's a lot of how you market what you're proposing. With Trump in the office, there has to be an emphasis on tariffs. You could talk about the border adjustment being a carbon tariff on foreign countries and foreign polluters like China and India. The climate community needs to focus on marketing and how we can better sell our ideas and convince other groups that this is a path forward economically to benefit our country. It'll also be interesting to see if the benefits of the Inflation Reduction Act in conservative areas are bought into by the local representatives and if they're interested in keeping those manufacturing jobs and the money they're getting from the federal government to invest in their communities, if that will be protected by them or if they're going to want to tear it up and restart with something else.
I was just going to say to what Zach was just saying too, that I just keep tag teaming on everything Zach says today. Our friend also in the conservative carbon pricing world, Alex Flint, who is the executive director at Alliance for Market Solutions, made a point recently that if you give the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, a few more years to do what it's supposed to do, given how much investment is being made in Republican districts from that bill, that then the Republicans that lead those districts can take the credit for all of the great economic prosperity that their congressional district is reaping. Was it Reagan that said, or somebody in the old-timey days, I'll say, said it doesn't matter who takes the credit as long as the work gets done. Yeah, let's let people take credit and feel good about clean energy and innovation and economic prosperity that comes from those. Yes, we have to get over that hump of that was a partisan process that passed that bill, so we should repeal it now. Again, points to the need for bipartisan cooperation.
Totally agree. Okay. And great minds think alike, Chelsea.
That was Chelsea Henderson and Representative Bob Inglis from RepublicEN.org. You also heard Katie Zarkresky and Zach Torpy, the hosts of Green Tea Party Radio. After our panel discussion, I sat down with Drew Ierley. He's CCL's Conservative Outreach Director. Drew's journey into climate advocacy began with a personal realization. He wanted to create a better future for his daughter. Since then, Drew has worked tirelessly to bring conservative voices into climate conversations, emphasizing the economic and national security benefits of action. We'll hear his perspective on how conservatives can lead the way in addressing climate change, the importance of bipartisan cooperation, and what opportunities exist for right-of-center advocates and organizations like Citizens Climate Lobby.
I'm Drew Ierley, CCL's Conservative Outreach Director. My job is to lend a conservative face and perspective to CCL's mission in showing that Republicans and those right of center do care about climate change and want to be involved in the discussions around climate policy. You know, it's like Chelsea said in the very first episode of this podcast, policies are more successful when they're bipartisan. So if we want this to be successful, we have to have a seat at that table having the discussion with everybody else to make sure that our values and morals are represented on this issue. Why climate for me? I won't lie. You know, it wasn't too long ago that I was on the opposite side of this debate, discussion. It took, you know, a lot of life-changing things for me, one being my daughter being born, for me to realize that this is an issue that's going to affect either my lifetime or my daughter's lifetime. I want to make sure that I'm involved in the discussion in finding solutions for this issue for her.
And how long have you been doing this? And what are some changes that you've seen as a result of it?
I really got invested in climate in 2016. The changes that I've seen, it is a much more palatable discussion with those that are right of center. The science around climate change isn't really so controversial anymore, at least not in my own peer social circles and networks. What really comes down to more is trusting the government to enact policies that are going to do more good than harm. To which I say, well, that's why you should be involved in the discussion. Make sure the policies that you want get put in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a whole new world politically happening. We have a very conservative Republican government. So for those conservatives that you know of and that you're going to get to know over the next year, what's your message for them as we begin the new year, the new administration? What message do you have?
Keep grinding, hold the line, let your elected officials know that this is an issue that you want to see addressed in a manner that represents your values. Every issue is also an opportunity. We have an opportunity here to stimulate the economy, creating new jobs, decrease, you know, unnecessary spending, increase our national security. Like, there's tons of opportunity that can come out of this issue. Keep raising those flags.
And for someone interested in CCL conservatives, what will they experience there? And what are the opportunities that exist in a year of being in CCL conservatives?
So we have the whole new set of action teams coming out. There is an opportunity to come and work on this issue from a space that piques your interest, be it business, economy, armed forces, you name it, or just right of center. Tons of opportunity to get involved in a manner that suits you, not so much that you have to fit a particular mold when you join CCL. There's ways to do it that'll perfectly align with your interests. You're going to be a hero. Every CCL event I walk into, being a Republican who is going against the stereotypical, you know, societal norm of, you know, Republicans don't care about this, you walk in the room and people are real glad to see you.
And I know in years past, there's been conference and lobby day in DC. Is this something that people can look forward to as well?
Absolutely. March 4th. This is our right of center only conference. So once a year, we all meet up in Washington, DC. It is strictly for right of center individuals. Do a day of conference and trainings. And then the following day, we go on the Hill and as nothing but right of center individuals, meet with nothing but right of center offices and have right of center discussions on the issue of climate change and climate policy.
I've been twice to cover it for Citizens Climate Radio, and I was amazed both times at how incredibly warmly these conservative volunteers were received in Republican lawmakers' offices. It was such a totally different experience that I saw when it was progressives talking about climate change. They talked about it differently, and they also were listened to and received differently.
It's a completely different discussion from our normal lobby days when everybody's in DC. If I'm going to speak blunt, that's the difference between meeting with somebody who wants to have discussion on what they can do versus meeting with somebody who wants to have a discussion around yelling at you for what you're not doing. So when we show up and meet with these offices, we just want to talk about, all right, how do we move forward?
I'm thrilled to hear that you've heard Hot Mess. You just mentioned the first episode. I never get to talk often with listeners, so I'm just so curious. What has the experience been like for you? Was there anything new and fresh that you heard in it?
There was all kinds of information in there, or just things that remind you of discussion points, like, you know, going back to that first episode with talking about Ford and how he was directly responsible for emissions reductions. Things like that, things that you learned so many years ago, but you tend to, you know, really forget about. It was definitely a nice walk down kind of, I don't want to say memory lane, but a good history lesson to remind you that at one point, conservatives were right there leading the charge on how to fix this issue. And if we were there, we can get back there.
Yeah, absolutely. And every major legislation that has passed about clean air and clean water and all that has always been under a Republican president. There's been virtually nothing passed with Democrats. We recently had the Inflation Reduction Act, of course, which is benefiting lots of red states, but that wasn't a bipartisan legislation. And
it may be challenged, but Republicans seem to get the work done.
The climate provisions of the IRA are great. I'll be empathetic in saying that I can understand some of the points of contention in other parts of the IRA, but the climate provisions and what they've done for, you know, local economies and, you know, even individuals such as myself who want to look into cleaner, more affordable, renewable technologies, the IRA is great. It's absolutely outstanding.
Anything else you want to add about CCL conservatives, about how people can get involved?
Go to CCL website, sign up, join our info session, learn about the organization. If you think it's a great fit for you, we'd be more than happy to have you come and, you know, join one of our action teams and go out there and advocate and pull those levers of political will.
That was Drew Ierley, Citizens Climate Lobby's Conservative Outreach Director. Thank you for listening to this episode of Hot Mess, How Climate Consensus Turned into Political Chaos. This episode and this series comes to you from Citizens Climate Radio, which is a project of Citizens Climate Education. You can find our full catalog of over 100 episodes at cclusa.org/radio. Or look for Citizens Climate Radio wherever you get podcasts. We produce a show every 2 weeks, and this season you will hear from voices on the right and the left. These include poets, pastors, politicians, and public health experts. Many thanks to our roundtable guest, Bob Inglis, Chelsea Henderson, Katie Zarkreski, and Zach Torpy, and to Drew Ierley. Learn more about Bob and Chelsea by visiting republicen.org. Chelsea hosts the Eco Right Speaks podcast, and she is the author of the excellent book, Glacial, The Inside Story of Climate Politics. It is published by Turner Publishing and available wherever you get books. You can hear Zach and Katie every week on Green Tea Party Radio, which is available wherever you get podcasts. To connect with Drew Ierley and his fellow conservatives at Citizens Climate Lobby, visit cclusa.org/conservatives. Every March, they hold a conference and lobby day in Washington, D.C.
Hot Mess is made possible through Citizens Climate Education. The show has been researched by Horace Moe, Lily Russian, and Peterson Toscano. Editorial assistance from Flannery Winchester, Ely Silvestri, and Brett Cease. Production by Peterson Toscano with assistance from Ely Silvestri. Music for this episode comes from Epidemic Sound and Ely Silvestri.
The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Citizens Climate Education. Special thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us on this journey. I'm Peterson Toscano, and this has been Hot Mess, How Climate Consensus Turned into Political Chaos.
And finally, Citizens Climate Radio correspondent Elise Silvestri sits down with Newbery Medal-winning author Linda Sue Park to discuss her latest book, Gracie Under the Waves.
In your journey to address climate change, why are you motivated to act? This is what motivates me. Developing countries have low carbon emissions, but bear the brunt of the climate crisis. This injustice makes me want to go out and talk to people and hit the streets protesting. However, that isn't the only reason. I'm scared, too. I have no idea what my future looks like. I want to live in a world where disastrous hurricanes don't hit my family every year. It's crucial to identify both your selfless and selfish motivations for participating in this movement. In climate activism, we call that mixture of motivation your self-interest. Your self-interest is a powerful antidote to burnout and can inform your activism. In light of that, I recently chatted with author Linda Sue Park to learn more about her self-interest. Linda Sue Park is a Newbery Medal winner, New York Times bestselling author, and founder and curator of Alita Books, an imprint of HarperCollins. We discussed her newest title, Gracie Under the Waves, a book for young readers. It's about a snorkeling lover named Gracie, who goes on a family trip to Honduras. The more Gracie snorkels, the more she learns about how endangered her favorite marine life is. I am a college student, and I found the book insightful and heartwarming in its approach to conservation and advocacy. I chatted with Linda Sue about her self-interest, the role of young people and art in climate advocacy, and more. First, I wanted to know what inspired her to write this book.
I had decided for many different reasons that I wanted to write a book about a girl who loves snorkeling to parallel my own experience. I decided that a research trip would be absolutely necessary. I chose Roatan, Honduras. It is known as one of the best places in our hemisphere to snorkel. It was absolutely amazing. I guess I should start by saying that I did not get to snorkel as a child the way Gracie does. I didn't have a chance to snorkel until I was in my 20s. But I put on my mask and I put my snorkel in and I put my face in the water, and within 10 seconds, I was completely hooked. I was seeing things I had never seen before. I was astonished, enchanted. Right then and there, I said, I am going to do this for the rest of my life as often as I can.
We dug deeper into Linda Sue's influences that led her to write about Gracie and the climate. Gracie's journey is a powerful case study of going from passion to action.
Gracie's journey just parallels my own in so many ways. She begins, first of all, by wanting to plan a snorkeling trip, even though she's only been a couple times in her life before. That's exactly me. Even though I'd only been a few times, I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm doing. She becomes concerned learning that the coral reefs are imperiled at first because she's like, well, I want to snorkel a lot. If the coral reefs aren't as beautiful, well, that will affect my snorkeling. Then, of course, she learns very soon it's a much bigger issue than that. The health of the coral reefs is intimately tied to the health of the oceans, on which we are all dependent. Even if you live in the middle of a landlocked place, the health of the oceans affects the health of the planet. Gracie learns that very quickly, and it's how I learned to find a personal way into caring about the climate crisis.
With this powerful self-interest in climate change, Linda Sue details how she views her role as an author in affecting change.
I see my job with a book like Gracie is getting people to see it, or at least hopefully prompting them to go online, to look for other resources. There are many ways into helping the planet. Find a place where your passions meet the world's needs. In my case, that is snorkeling and the ocean. In other people's cases, is it, do you love to go camping? Do you love to go hiking or bike riding outside? Do you love to plant things? I'm a gardener now post-pandemic. There are countless ways to help our planet. And the most effective way of all is if it can be through one of your own passions, because then your enthusiasm is genuine and you don't get tired of talking about it. And you can spread the word to even more people as you do your own part.
Linda Sue speaks more about the importance of young people finding their self-interest and channeling their passion.
My young readers, so wonderful to write for them because they are idealistic and enthusiastic, and they are not yet jaded by hopeless despair. When they decide that they care about something, they embrace it wholeheartedly. We all have such different interests and passions and causes, but the health of the planet needs to be on everyone's list, no matter what their other interests are. If the planet gets sick and dies, there's no point in any other cause. Need to let people know about it, and here is another opportunity to harness that incredible power and energy that young people have. The result was Gracie's story.
We ended by talking about important values like community and empathy that will continue to be ever important in climate education and action.
Unless you are a bona fide hermit, you live in a world with other people. It's very important at any time, maybe now more than any other time in my lifetime, that we learn to share space with people we don't always want to share space with. Connections and community and collaboration are values that we need to push to the front more. For a very long time, especially in sort of the American mentality and our U.S. history, what was valued more was innovation and individualism. We've grown as a nation. That time is past. It is no longer serving us as well as it once might have. including things like toxic masculinity, a sense of great depression of feeling isolated that so many people are experiencing and was exacerbated by the pandemic. For many decades, there was this zeitgeist in the children's book world that the main character needed to solve the problems they were facing by themselves. They needed to be the true hero of the story in that way. I've always been uncomfortable with that. And now, as an adult and a writer of books for young children, it's something I consciously push against. It is more important for people to learn when and how it's appropriate to ask for help, when it's necessary, especially once again, boys and young men, that it's not a weakness to ask for help. Anyone can learn how much stronger and more powerful we are when we work with others and when we work on our own. Remember that the other people in our lives are also the heroes of their own story, that everybody has a story, and once we learn their stories, it is very difficult to ever again see them as part of a block or a group or anonymous faceless stereotype. Once we know someone's story, they become an individual and somebody that we can care about.
Gracie Under the Waves is published by HarperCollins and is available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, or at your local independent bookstore. The publisher offers a free educator guide for the book. Learn more about Linda Sue Park and her award-winning books by visiting lindasuepark.com. I put links into our show notes for you at ccLUSA.org/radio. That's ccLUSA.org/radio.
Well, that's it for this special edition of Spirit in Action. If you want to hear more, you can find the full Hot Mess series and Citizens Climate Radio at ccLUSA.org/radio or wherever you get your podcast. A huge thank you to today's guests, Bob Inglis, Chelsea Henderson, Katie Zarkreski, Zach Torpy, and Drew Ierley. Thank you for sharing your perspectives on conservative climate action. And to Linda Sue Park and Elise Silvestri for showing how storytelling connects people to the climate conversations in new ways. Elise created original music to accompany the audio she recorded and edited. Spirit in Action is broadcast on over 30 independent radio stations across the U.S. If this episode resonated with you, share it with a friend and help spread the conversation. Until next time, I'm Peter Santoscano. Thanks for listening. Now back to Mark Helpsmeet.
Thanks, Peterson. I hope you all have been informed, enriched, inspired, and maybe grown in hope with today's sharing from Peterson Toscano and Citizens Climate Radio. CCR will be here again in May to share another episode. In the meantime, come to NordenspiritRadio.org and follow the links we've posted and verify that there really are conservative climate activists seeking to heal this world and how they hope to make it happen, perhaps with different tools and techniques, but with that same happy future for all of us. There's links on our site to other work that Peterson has done and is doing, and you really will be better off if you explore all of that wide-ranging work. And please remember that while I put my hours and energy into this out of love and dedication, you make it possible through your donations, and you'll help make our 20th year of broadcasts strong and sustainable by donating. There's an address on NordenspiritRadio.org, or you can donate to us via PayPal online. In any case, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week for Spirit in Action. The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
With every voice, with every song, we will move this world along, and our lives.
hope.